moment I wake up, before I put on my makeup, I say a little prayer for you. Walk home in my hair now, and wondering what dress to wear now, I say a little prayer for you. Forever, forever, you'll stay in my heart, and I will love you forever and ever. We never will part, oh, I'll love you together, together. That's how it must be to live without you. It would only mean heartbreak for you. I run for the bus, dear. While riding, I think of us, dear. I say a little prayer for you. At work, I just take time, and all through my coffee break time, I say a little prayer for you. Forever, forever, you'll stay in my heart, and I will love you forever and ever. We never will part, oh, I'll love you together, together. That's how it must be to live without you. Would only mean heartbreak for me.
Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 398-1020, the Welcome Home Show. My name is Joe Griffey, here with Bill Davenport, Marine Vietnam veteran, Logan Runyon, our producer here. And, Bill, it's a cold day here in New Jersey.
Another cold one. We're starting to set records here. Not going above 32 for days on end, but it may change. But it's still not going to be good. But it is winter. It's February now, or tomorrow. Today is February. Looks hopefully by the time this is aired that the snowstorm is bypasses this time.
A couple months from now, we'll be complaining about the heat. But we got a good friend on our show today, a lady I have a lot of respect for, a good American Gold Star mom, Sarah Taylor. You with us?
I am, Joe. Hello.
I love you, Sarah.
You know I love you too.
And where are you at now?
I'm in Henderson, Kentucky.
And you got a horse farm, correct?
We do.
How are the horses doing?
They're doing well, considering we have about 12 inches of snow on the ground, and it's zero with the wind chill today, so.
How do they, Sarah, how do they handle the cold? They're in a barn, I'm sure.
Yeah, they've all got structures that they can go into when they get too cold. But, they're not too bad. I think the hot weather takes more of a toll on them than the cold weather does.
Yeah. And you are the proud mother of Specialist David W. Taylor, 82nd Airborne.
Do
us a favor and tell everybody about David.
Well, I always say that David was a handful. He was a natural-born leader. He was very athletic. He was very patriotic. Always wanted to do for others, which I absolutely loved about him, because you don't get too many young men, especially teenagers, that want to help others. So all David had ever wanted to do was be in the military. I believe that had he not been...
What did he share?
We're so proud of him.
Did he like horses?
He liked things with horsepower.
Yeah.
But not so much horses.
Horses. That makes a lot of sense. Did he play sports? And, you know, what high school did he go to?
He went to Webster County in Dixon, Kentucky, and he played football and he ran track.
I'll tell you what, he looks tough as nails. I mean, really, look at him. I wouldn't want to run into him. How old was he when he passed away?
He was 20.
Kind of too young.
20 in December.
Too young, isn't it?
He got killed in March. Yes.
Very, you know, and he was the pride of your life. And,
absolutely.
And what do you get out of it? Know what you get out of it? You become the past national president of Gold Star Mothers. And, Bill, these Gold Star Mothers, and you know some of them, Bill, they dedicate their life to helping other mothers. Even though they have the same grief, that same pain in their heart. Sarah, how many states, when you were the national president a few years ago, how many states did you visit seeing Gold Star Mothers?
Oh, probably 12, including Hawaii.
So. And you just, it's an organization that nobody wants to belong to. But once you do belong, there's a bond between all the mothers that's like no other bond in the country, in the world. Would you agree with that?
I do. Yeah, we share this journey together and try to do what we can to help each other to be able to cope with everyday life and life without our children.
You know, I always say the same thing about you. But you and I become very good friends. Bill, do you know how you could judge the friendship of a person? I'm standing at the top. She knows what I'm talking about. I'm standing at the top of the Vietnam Wall, right about where the three soldiers are. And it was right before the 50th anniversary that the mall had honoring Vietnam veterans for their 50th anniversary. And Eric Mitten, Donna Hull, and I are standing there. And it's a busy day. It was, I think they had just got done putting the flower, the wreaths, in front of the wall that day for the commemoration service. And you come up to me. Do you remember what you asked me to hold on for you?
My bright green purse.
My bright green purse. Now, Bill, it's not like a sticker pocketbook under my arm. It had about a 10-foot strap on it. So it hung around my shoulder, and everybody walked by, and they were like staring like, what is that guy carrying such a bright green purse? But you only had me hold it for about an hour and a half. I'll never forget that. I think that's when you and I bonded. You used to get to Washington quite a bit, didn't you?
I did. I only make it about three times a year now, and that's for... I try to go for Vietnam Veterans Day, Memorial Day, and then September for... Not just for Gold Star Mother's Day weekend, but for another group I belong with, Angel Force USA.
How is Danny doing?
He's doing well. He's a character, isn't he? Because he's from your neighborhood.
Yeah, he lived two streets from me on Erdrich Street in Wissanomi. Bill, when I went down for 3 days with Colleen and Patrick Hughes to the Army's birthday, they had the big celebration. The first afternoon there, we're in a tent, and it's right by the right on the mall. And I hear this band, and I said, "Oh my God, somebody Grateful Dead's here." And we walked over, and there was 8 or 9 pieces in the band, and it was your band, you and the other lady, Ann's band. And I mean, like, Bill, the musicians, one played for David Bowie for like 8 years. Who was Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young? Wasn't it Nash's son?
Crosby's
son was in the band. They were,
yeah.
And let me tell you something. Danny's vocals, when they do Creedence Clearwater Revival, Fortunate Son, you think it's them out there. I mean, they were absolutely fabulous and great and all. I reached out to you because last week we had on Chris, and Chris is very open about talking about his brother committing suicide. He doesn't sugarcoat it. He doesn't use, oh, he passed away or never. His brother was 82nd Airborne also.
Wow.
Just like your David. That's what caught my eye, and I said, I have to reach out. His brother, Michael, did 15 months in 2005, did in Iraq, 15 months in 2007 in Afghanistan, and 10 or 12 months in 2009. Born and raised when they were young boys in the Philadelphia area, then they moved to Quakertown. On one of Michael's tours, his Humvee, he was a gunner on the top of a Humvee. I believe that the driver got thrown out. Michael got thrown off the top when a roadside bomb hit him, or a rocket, whatever it was. And three guys got killed. And he lived with survivor's guilt for about 10 years. You have to get out of the military, post-traumatic stress, TBI, in and out of mental hospitals, VA mental hospitals. And 2 years ago, he took his life. I say it like it is. Sat in a bench and blew his brains out midnight. One night, his mother was a nurse that he was living with. And she actually was living with him to take care of him. She came home from work one night. Her shift was 11 at night. And Chris told me that a few hours later, after Michael told his mom he was going to take a walk down to the park, and she heard the sirens going, she knew Chris ended his life. And I guess the nutshell is, the brother, for the last 2 years, has been asking the town of Quakertown to add his name to a Veterans Park plaque. And they said the town council, the mayor, or whoever, were pretty adamant saying, though, that he died of suicide and he disgraced the uniform and he's not entitled to. I think that's wrong, Sarah.
That is completely wrong. And what a dishonor to this young man for three tours right there in the midst of some of the worst fighting, you know, the most casualties. It's an absolute...
Wait a minute, Sarah. Of both wars, of Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah.
I wonder if the mayor of Quakertown... And I'll have his name for now. I have his name now. I had to bring it with me. Actually, I do it, but I'll give him a chance to straighten this mess out. But the mayor and the five people in council, I looked them all up. None of them are veterans. Do you think if the mayor, and I should be fair, I couldn't find anything that any of them are veterans. Usually, Bill, don't you find a politician, the first thing on their resume is they served in the military.
And they'll identify the groups they belong to.
Exactly.
And the awards they may have received.
And I wonder if any of the town council of Quakertown, and to get one thing straight here, I don't care if they're mad at me. I could care less. I could give a damn less. I wonder if any of them would get in a Humvee and drive up, what's the road in Fallujah? Route 1, the most dangerous road in the world? Or take a ride through the town of Fallujah. And then they would come back and say, no, this guy's not a hero.
Yeah, I can't believe it. Like you said, I don't even think they would do it. You know, most people get frantic when they get lost in the town they live in or the next town over. Being 3,000 miles away from home or halfway across the world, yeah, they're definitely not doing it. They're just absolutely not in touch. And you would think that at least somebody in their family had served, you know, their parents or their grandparents, and that they would have some sympathy, some empathy.
How about common sense?
And you would think that with the freedoms we have that they would appreciate that young man's service, regardless how his life ended.
Well, you just jumped to what I was going to ask you. there's only one thing your David did. The main thing he did for his country, what Michael did for his country, what Bill's friend that he just buried yesterday did for his country. They gave us freedom. You can't go on Amazon or Walmart and buy freedom. You can buy a flag. You can buy an American flag, but you can't buy freedom. That freedom only comes from guys by the name of David Taylor, Michael, Joe Crescenz, your friend Bill that passed away, and all the 59,000 that died in Vietnam. Because they deal with an issue when they come home from war. War's horrible. Listen, Sarah, stay on the line. Have you ever been to Gold Star Peak in Alaska?
I have not, but
would you like to go?
I would, and I've met Kirk at some point in time, maybe on an airplane.
Okay.
And we've had conversation, that was years ago, but I have, and I do know about the peak. Yes, I do.
Yes, and you're listening to Welcome Home Show. We'll be right back with past national president Sarah Taylor from Kentucky. Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 398-1020, the Welcome Home Show. Bill, this is a pretty tough subject to talk about. I just don't understand it. I don't get it. Maybe I'm just a dumb Vietnam veteran, but I can tell the difference when somebody goes to war, somebody raises their hand to die for the very politicians in this country, then they make rules that we got to throw veterans under the bus when they don't come home and deal with the issues that the government should have handled from day one. We're letting these soldiers come back from, like, time bombs or walk in the streets of America because of what they witnessed in Vietnam, in Korea, in Iraq, and Afghanistan.
The politicians blame that veteran for what he did. An example is one can't be buried in Bay County Veterans Cemetery because he had to pick up his buddy's body parts. They sent him there. The county elected officials sent him to Vietnam.
Remember, great.
And he had to pick up body parts, and he didn't handle that well. And they said, well, then you're not well enough to be buried in our cemetery.
Do you remember Patrick Hughes? Well, of course, his friend Graves that worked at Graves Registration in Da Nang?
Yeah.
All he did was wash down bodies of dead soldiers, remove the weapons, their hand grenades, their 45s, their M16s, washed the bodies down, fingerprinted them. Graves never had a good day the rest of his life when he came home. And these guys are in and out of mental hospitals for serving our country and their freedom. And I just don't get it. Sarah, you understand all this. You fought for families that had suicide in their family, veterans, didn't you?
Oh, 100%. And I will go still to this day to any KIA family that wants to say that suicide families don't belong in organizations such as American Gold Star Mothers, because I just turn to them and I'll say politely, say, you know, we don't know how our sons would have been if they, when they came back, if they had come back. You know, that was one of the things that I was worried about with David going into the military, was because of the mental health and the suicide rate. And I want to, I was reading the other day the Operation Deep Dive report from the American Warriors Partnership, and it says that veteran suicides are significantly underreported. They suggest that as many as 24 veterans a day die by suicide, with an additional 20 dying by self-injury mortality, which is like drug overdoses, which are not counted in the VA system. And if that's true, Joe, the numbers are staggering, 16,000-plus a year. And those just aren't numbers, Joe. Those are the lives of patriots who served and fought for this nation.
And they're the sons and, daughters and moms and dads. They're the sons and daughters and moms and dads. And what you said is true. If a veteran gets in his pickup truck tonight and he or she drives into the Pinelands and hits a tree because they want to end their life, that's death by vehicle. It's not suicide. And I couldn't think of a better person to have one today than you, Sarah, with this. Kirk, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
Now, where the hell are you at? She's in Kentucky. Where are you at?
Well, I live in Alaska, but I'm currently traveling. I'm in California. I just went to the graveside of a soldier that served in my unit that was killed in Iraq. I just met another veteran from that conflict, and we went and stood at his graveside paying our respects. So, yeah.
And you are the founder. You did 23 years in the Army, correct?
23 years, active duty, Army, 18 years as a paratrooper.
So you come home to Alaska, and you lost over 50 of your buddies when you served multiple tours overseas. What did you...
Oh, no. No, I lost 53 in my last deployment.
In your last deployment.
I was there
deployment.
For 15 months, and my the brigade I was in lost 53 paratroopers.
What? Where was that at? Afghanistan?
Iraq.
Iraq. What part?
During the surge, so we were in southern, as well as we had people north of Baghdad, but we were inside the Iron Triangle.
Do you think these politicians that make rules that harm our veterans would ever go up Route 1 through the Iron Triangle or through Fallujah? Have you ever been to Fallujah?
Yeah, well, they wouldn't do it on ground. They'd do it over, you know, in a helicopter or something probably.
Yeah. How dangerous are the roads in Fallujah and leading to Fallujah?
Well, you go in and you clear the route going in. And you turn around and go back. Hopefully you don't go back the same route, but if you had to go back the same route, there would be IEDs waiting for you to come out. So the road would get, you know, filled with IEDs behind you as you went in, and you turned around to come back, and there'd be IEDs to clear again.
So anyway, you're home in Alaska. You decide to do something. And you've been on our show. You've been on our show before. Years ago, you were on our show. I can't believe it's probably 8 or 9 years ago.
Yes, sir.
What did you do to honor the over 50 men and women that you lost on your last trip? What did you personally? Now we're asking the mayor of Quakertown to put a guy's name on a plaque that committed suicide. What have you done to help Gold Star moms and dads and brothers and sisters in this country?
The very first thing I did when I retired, I came back from that deployment, is I was kind of lost and trying to find some purpose, trying to process everything that had happened. So the very first thing I did is I jumped on my motorcycle and I rode all the way around America and visited the homes and the graves of those paratroopers that I had lost. That was the first thing I did. And when I got back to Alaska, that still wasn't enough. And I don't want to say I was struggling, but I was trying to figure out what to do next and what my purpose was going to be. I love the mountains. I love climbing in the mountains. And as I stood on Mount POWMIA, just north of Anchorage, I started to really think more about the guys I lost. Three of the guys I lost were actually POWs in Iraq. And so I found myself on that mountain all days, all times of the year, all days, you know, time of the day, time of the year, if you will, thinking about my guys and wanted to do more for the Gold Star families, not just on my deployment, for all of our that we've lost. And so I picked out a peak, a nearby peak, right next to Mount POWMIA, and I petitioned Congress to name it Gold Star Peak in honor of all of our Gold Stars. And when we talk about Gold Stars, our organization doesn't delineate or differentiate between a Gold Star or a next of kin. So, you know, a traditional Gold Star is somebody that dies in combat or in conflict. The next of kin lapel button refers to somebody that died while on active duty or in you know, not in combat. And so Congress on February 8th of 2018 voted and approved my request and named Gold Star Peak. I called my families and told them that there's a mountain in Alaska that's now named. You come to Alaska, me and my team will get you up there. So here we are, fast forward to 2026, and my team has conducted over 160 climbs, assisting close to 3,600 Gold Stars veterans, active duty service members, and their families on summiting Gold Star Peak to honor their hero.
Kirk, how high is it from the ground to the top of the peak? How high?
It's a 3,000-foot gain in elevation, so the change is 3,000 feet that brings you to just under 4,300 feet.
And what you told me years ago, my friend, I think about all the time, you said you did this so the moms and dads and brothers and sisters can be a little closer to heaven, to be there near their loved ones.
That's right. Their heroes are that much closer to heaven.
What's on the top of the peak when they get there?
On the top of the peak is a tower. We call it the Honor Tower. It stands over 6 feet tall. It has a gold star, a welded gold star, a three-dimensional gold star that sits on top of it. It sits on top of five blades that are buried in the earth, cemented into the ground. Those five blades represent each branch of service that are attached to each point of the star, which is gold. It's pointed true north because the sun comes up in the east and sets in the west, and we want our heroes to be illuminated all day long by the sun. So the first verse of TAPS is, "Day is done, gone the sun," which we want our gold stars to know that their heroes are being shined upon daily and highlighted by the sun.
You listen to the Welcome Home Show. We'll be right back. Listen, this song my wife wanted us to play today, to dedicate it to you and your staff. Do you mind listening to this song before we get back talking?
Go ahead.
Way up
north to Alaska.
Way up
north to Alaska.
North to Alaska. Go north, the rush is on. North to Alaska. Go north, the rush is on. Big Sam left Seattle in the year of 92 with George Pratt, his partner, and brother Billy, too. They crossed the Yukon River and found the Bonanza Gold below that old white mountain just a little southeast of Nome. Sam crossed the majestic mountains to the valleys far below. He talked to his team of Huskies as he mushed on through the snow. With the northern lights a-running wild in the land of the midnight sun. Yes, Sam McCord was a mighty man in the year of 1901. Where the river is winding, big nuggets they're finding. North to Alaska.
on way up north,
to Alaska.
Way up north,
to Alaska.
North to Alaska, I go north, the rush is on. North to Alaska, I go north, the rush is on. George turned to Sam with his gold in his hand.
Said, Sam, you're looking at a lonely, lonely man. I'd trade all the gold that's buried in this land for one small band of gold to place on sweet little Jimmy's hand. 'Cause a man needs a woman to love him all the time.
Remember, Sam, a true love is so hard to find. I'd build for my Jenny a honeymoon home below that old white mountain, just a little southeast of Nome, where the river is winding, big nuggets they're finding. North to Alaska, I go north, the rush is on.
Kirk, am I saying that the wealthiest land, the richest soil in Anchorage, Alaska, or maybe all the United States, is on top of Gold Star Peak? The very ground that the mom and dads and brothers and sisters walk on?
Yeah, it is. Thank you. Thank you for that. Yeah, it's still absolutely the last frontier. And again, we're so honored to take and assist these Gold Star's children through parents, siblings, spouses, widows to the summit. And it's something that we take a lot of pride in. My team is most of them, almost every one of them is a combat veteran and or a Gold Star family member themselves. So,
and listen, we're going to reach out this week to Tunnels to Towers to see they're big into mental health, and you want to build a lodge at the bottom of the hills, and you have psychologists here to help families if they're having a bad day or dealing with their emotions, because that pain, that gut, never that dagger in the heart like Sarah has every day. She disguises it well, but it never goes away, Kurt. I want to introduce you and Sarah to a guy I just met. We just met on our show last week, and his name is Chris Young, and Chris lost his brother Michael 2 years ago. Michael did 15 months in Iraq, 15 months in Afghanistan, and another year he was part of a five-man Hummer team that he was a gunner and got thrown off, and Michael had traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress. And they're refusing the town of Quakertown and or different organizations to put his name on a plaque in a park because he's kind of not worthy of it, because he came home living with years of traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress and survivor's guilt, took his own life. And our country now looks at these guys like they're not even citizens, you know. Kurt, do you think that's wrong?
Absolutely. I challenge every single one of them. I would challenge them. I'd take them on in a conversation anytime they want to talk about it.
You and me both.
I've lost
Sarah.
16. What's that?
You, me, and Sarah Taylor. Oh, I want to introduce you to Sarah Taylor. Sarah, I forgot all about Sarah. And we have another guest on the show. Sarah is the past, what was it, 3 years ago, national president of the Gold Star Mothers?
Yes.
Sarah?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Well, you were, how long ago was it? 3 years ago you were national president?
Yeah, 22 to 23.
And you've heard of Gold Star Peak, but you've never been to it, correct?
Right. I know several mothers that have been.
And what was your reaction?
Oh, the experience of a lifetime. The experience of a lifetime for them. It's something they won't forget.
Well, I want to introduce you, Sarah Taylor, to Kurt Alkire. He's the founder of Gold Star Peak. He's on the phone with us, so if you want to say hello to him.
I've met Kurt somewhere. We may have been on a plane together, and we're friends on Facebook, you know, whatever that means nowadays. But
Yes.
Sir, hi again. I mean, it's been several years,
yes.
Probably 9-10 years.
Yeah, we've met along the way, and we definitely have had some of your board members. Carlson has come and climbed with us. McGee.
Yep.
Sherry McGee, and every one of them is special. So every single one of them is special.
Sarah, how important is it what Kurt's doing and his team are doing? How important is that to our Gold Star families?
I don't even know that there are words of how important this is. You know, we just don't want our children, our brothers, our sisters, our parents to be forgotten, and to have an experience of something that most people wouldn't get to experience in a normal situation, to be in Alaska, to climb that peak, to climb any peak. It's got to be a godsend moment when it all comes to an end, when you're up there on the top. I just can't even imagine the overwhelming emotions that those families have being up there. And like Kirk said, and it just, I had tears in my eyes a while ago, you know, you're that much closer to your loved one there. And I just imagine it's probably very spiritual, a very moving whole couple of days, weekend, whatever the trip is. I imagine the whole thing is, very special. I can tell by listening to Kurt today what a good soul he has, and
you know
what,
you know,
a blessing he is to this world. Thank you.
You know, Sarah, when Jesus was on Earth, he was always climbing mountains. You know, he climbed mountains to feed the poor people, to give them drink, to give them clothing. Kurt, that's what you're doing. You're giving people hope. Kurt, I want to introduce you and Sarah. We have Chris Young on. Chris is the brother of Michael that passed away 2 years ago. And I was hoping you guys wouldn't mind saying hello to him. And just talking about how you look at his brother's service to us, to our country. So Sarah and Kurt, say hello. Chris, you're with us, right?
Yeah, I'm here.
How you doing, my friend?
I'm good. I got a little choked up listening to Kurt describe the peak, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But,
well, would you...
I'm okay.
Listen, Kurt won't say no to Joe Griffey's or Bill Davenport. Kurt, do you think someday we can get Chris up on that mountain?
I look forward to it. I look forward to it. And I've, despite what I'm hearing about the monument and or the name and all that, that just really digs at me. I didn't mention, or maybe I did, but I've lost 16 of my fellow soldiers that were either my soldiers of mine, peers of mine, or superiors of mine to suicide since I retired in 2008. So I know it all too often, and I could tell you every single one of them was carrying something, which we don't know, because they carry it. We don't know what people carry silently, and
right.
They were carrying silently the hidden scars of what they experienced while we were deployed. And so I know all too often about that. And so it just strikes my heart to its core when I hear about it's not connected. There is no connection.
Yeah, well,
they're absolutely wrong.
Not only are they saying it's not connected, but I've handed people at the Legion in Quakertown, Pennsylvania, the VA rule, like documents showing, like officially stating it's service connected to his time.
My God, I got it right in front of me. You sent it to me. The VA says we understand.
Yeah, I mean,
we understand.
Basically, anyone that asks me, I'm like, here is the like paperwork from the VA.
Wait a minute, I'm shocked. The VA says we know Michael committed suicide, but it's due to his multiple tours in Iraq, Afghanistan, and living with survivor's guilt.
Yep.
They admit it. That they contributed
without hesitation
to the situation.
There wasn't even any sort of like pushback from the VA. Like immediately they ruled it. His suicide was service connected.
Chris, it was the first paragraph on one of the pages.
Yeah.
They came right out.
And I've been told it's not good enough. My brother he shot himself literally thinking no one cared about his service. And Joe, I told you, I don't know if I said it on the radio last week, but I said it to you in private, like going through this for over a year now, trying to get his hometown to put his name on a memorial showing he made the ultimate sacrifice when so few wore the uniform post 9/11 and he was infantry in 82nd Airborne. And like going through that and getting stonewalled and getting politely pushed away and turned away. And it started to feel for me like no one cared about his service. And then talking to other guys he served with and hearing their stories. And it's for me, it's about my brother, but it's also about all of you guys that, you know, came back to large indifference and hearing my brother's death isn't good enough to honor his service is just, it just rips me apart every time.
Chris, Sarah Taylor's son, David W. Taylor, was KIA in Afghanistan, Sarah?
Yeah. Yeah.
With the 82nd Airborne, the same unit as your brother. Chris, do you know where your brother served at? Well, he was in Iraq and Afghanistan. Do you know where?
I don't know specifically. I know in he deployed in Iraq in 05, Afghanistan in 07 and 09, and I know part of 07 was in or around the Helmand province, but I'm not. I don't remember specifics beyond that.
Kurt, are you familiar with that province?
I'm familiar with the name, but no, that's not where I was at.
No. And Sarah, how about you? Do you know where
David was in Kandahar?
Boy, that's a name. That's a name on the news every night, isn't it, Bill?
Yeah.
Anyway,
I just want to say hello, and I want to tell you, keep fighting for your brother, and Joe can put you in contact with me. I know a lot of the national presidents of these organizations. A lot of these organizations, National Veteran Service Organizations, are, I won't say riding on, but are touting suicide prevention, suicide awareness, and for this to go on and for, you know, the American Legion, the AMVET, the VFW not to fight for you is shameful, and it doesn't happen around this
people
area.
People saying no.
Wait a minute, Chris. Kurt's not saying no. Sarah's not saying no. In the Welcome Home Show, Bill and I are not saying no.
No, it's the
we'll never
VFW
get this
in up. Quakertown, Pennsylvania. It's the American Legion in Quakertown, Pennsylvania. It's anyone that works at that township building that, you know, I've spoken to, that tries to get me off the phone as fast as possible.
Now, Brian Fitzpatrick, the congressman that I helped get elected, his brother Michael helped the show name the VA hospital in Philadelphia. Brian called my show last week. I did not look at my phone. We were getting ready to go on the show at 1:37. He hasn't called me back. I haven't heard from his office this week. And guys, Kyle, if you think I'm going away, I'm not. I'm not. Election time's coming. Brian Fitzpatrick, not a bad guy. Not a veteran. Kyle's not a veteran. Seth in the office isn't a veteran. I don't know if anybody in that office is a veteran. They better take this serious. Because damn it, I will come. to that district and campaign for whoever running against Brian Fitzpatrick if he doesn't fix this problem. And I'm not threatening Brian Fitzpatrick. I'm promising him there's a big difference. You did not go to war, Brian, and neither did most of the people in your office, and neither did most of the people that are going to be voting to unchange our government from being shut down that it is now, didn't serve. We got about a 10 or 12% rate in Congress that served. That can't be. That can't be. We can't forget. A veteran has two battles in their life. One, the war in Iraq, Afghanistan, Vietnam. And the other battle is when they come home, dealing with the VA, dealing with their public, dealing with their mental and their physical injuries. And, Bill, do you think we got to do a better job?
Well, it's not with the suicide. It's the days and months and years ahead of the suicide that we can actually help and make a difference. And that's where all the focus should be.
You know, Chris, the night, God, I hope I say this right, but the night Michael shot himself, that was probably the first night in a long time he had peace. Because he lived with those demons for, what, 10 years since he got out of the Army?
Longer, yeah.
You know, what's the old saying, Bill? When was the last time you were in Iraq or the last time you were in Vietnam? Last night in my dreams? If you haven't been there, and Kurt, I'm sure you've been there. Sari, you've been there. That is a pain in your mind that travels down to your heart, to your soul, that just doesn't go away. There's nowhere to crawl. Chris, I'm sure there's days that you don't know where to crawl in your house. You don't know where to hide from the pain of losing your brother.
Well, I spiraled pretty bad in the first couple months. I don't remember, to be honest with you, I've never actually spoken about this publicly. It's a little weird for me, but September 18th, 2024, he shot himself. I don't remember the next 2 months, or it's very spotty. By the end of that year, I could see myself really spiraling, and I asked for help, and I got into grief counseling before it got bad.
And I'm sure I can speak for Kurt, and I'm sure I can speak for Sarah. You guys see way too much of this, don't you, Sarah and Kurt?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Kurt, did you tell me?
One of the problems, Joe, I think one of the big problems is the transitioning out, and by them not... They could have done a better job from the get-go of this. They could have pulled the families in, the mothers, the dads, the wives, the children, and say, this is things that may happen, you know, if you start seeing this or this behavior. And they didn't. And now they're going to do away with the transitioning out program. And the suicide rate is going to go, it's going to blow the roof off because they barely have any help to begin with when they leave. And, you know, go into society where they feel like, you know, they feel isolated. They can't find employment. They have housing and food instability. Can you imagine in 2026 that our veterans have food instability in this country? It is sick.
Well, now, wait a minute, Kurt. The government shut down. Probably the Coast Guard isn't getting paid. And last time I read, they had 88 Coast Guard cutters in Vietnam fighting for our safety. And we're not paying them. Listen, we only got a minute. Sarah, will you come back on?
Anytime, Joe.
You know I love you.
You know I love you, too. And I'll have my green purse next time I see you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, Kirk, we appreciate you. Chris, keep fighting. You know, if there's anything I can do to help you, just reach out. I will fight for you. I will fight for Michael. I promise you that.
And, Kurt, give a number where people can contact you about coming to Gold Star Peak in Anchorage, Alaska.
GoldStarPeak.org.
And Chris will give you the last 30 seconds before we go to a mandatory break. We didn't plan. You didn't know we were going to call you. I just wanted to, I wanted to throw you in the mix with Sarah and Kirk just to give you a little peace of mind, let you know you're not alone in this.
I appreciate it.
You know we love you.
It means a lot. I mean, I've felt nothing but alone dealing with this for the last.
Well, let me tell you something to the politicians of this country, going all the way down from the White House to the mayor of all these towns. We have to take our veterans when they come home. We have to wrap our arms around them, show them that we love them. We don't have to wrap our arms around them and throw them under a train. The very reason we live in a free country is on account of these men and women that live with the nightmares every night when they come home. And we got to do a better job.
It shouldn't be hard to honor a veteran.
Do the right thing, or we're going to hold you responsible. Listen, we got to go to a break. God bless you, Sarah. I love you. Kurt, we love you.
Love you, too.
Chris, you know where we're at. You know, we'll never give up the fight for Michael. I promise you that.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Welcome Home Show.
Hey, man, who's that cat coming down the street?
I don't know, but it sounds to me like that whipping man with the bone.
Sure having himself a ball.
All right.
Welcome back, everybody. And today being February 1st, we'll announce the birthdays and the casualties that are on the Vietnam Memorial Wall in Washington, D.C., and Wildwood, New Jersey, and numerous other places throughout the country. Today, there'll be 160 birthdays, four of those from New Jersey. Casualties, there'll be 209. That's a high number, but it's when Tet started. which caused the increase, six of those from New Jersey. We also want to remember the astronauts, the seven astronauts who died January 28th, 1986, in the Challenger accident. 73 seconds into their flight, it exploded due to, damaged or O-rings that were caused by a freezing conditions, much like they're having right now in Florida. It was 37 degrees that day. Most people, like they do when the Kennedy assassination or 9/11, they know where they were when they heard that news that the spaceship exploded with the seven casualties. I was with at my daughter's elementary school at a spelling bee contest when we got home and listened to the 12 o'clock news. We were updated. It's very sad. It stopped the program for several years.
Wasn't there a school teacher on that?
There was, I believe.
I think the first school teacher.
Yeah, there was two females, I believe.
Bill, how many years ago was that?
40 years. It's the 40th anniversary.
Seems like it was yesterday.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you know where you are and what you're doing, and it sticks in your mind over the years. So it's a... We want to remember them and their effort. It's just scary enough to be in a space, spaceship going up there, and all the preparation and life. It's just a shame.
Yeah. Listen, I'm glad we were able to get Chris Young on the show for a few minutes to
and you can
let him know we're thinking about his brother.
And we know that he now has some issues. We need to get him on the air now and again and talk to him, make sure he's all right, and help him out when he can. He needs to help him out the most would be to get his brother's name somewhere. That's what he wants.
And, you know, Brian Fitzpatrick can make that happen. He's a U.S. congressman. He should be able to get it done. Rodney Little, you with us?
Yes, I am, Joe. How are you?
Well, all right. We just had on Sarah Taylor, a Gold Star mother from National Past President from 3 years ago. And we had on Kirk, who's the founder of the 23 years in the Army Mobile Tours of Iraq, Afghanistan. He's the founder of Gold Star Peak in Anchorage, Alaska. And they what do you say? It's 3,000
feet elevation.
He takes Gold Star moms and dads and brothers and sisters and family members to the peak so they're a little bit closer to heaven. Mike Myers, you with us?
I am, Joe.
Hey, what's up, my friend? You know something? I am more, you know, I'm the big supporter of you and Rodney and Reed and Angel with the military basketball program. I think it's the best freaking program out there for veterans when they get out of the service. Not only basketball, but hockey, bowling, golf, ping pong, checkers, where veterans are around veterans. We just had one, Chris Young, whose brother Michael, Mike did 44 months in Iraq, Afghanistan, three tours, two 15-month tours, and a 10 or 12-month tour. He was on a Humvee. He was one of the five members. Two survived. He was one of the ones. Three guys got killed. Came home with traumatic brain injury. Came home with TBI. And dealt with it for 9 or 10 years, in and out of hospitals, God knows how many medications from the VA, and never once did Chris, his brother, tell me that he went golfing or played basketball or maybe went, like you see in the Philadelphia VA hospital, they used to have before the pandemic. You'd always see 100, 150 vets sitting around playing chess or checkers with one another. Mike, would you agree that that saves lives?
Absolutely. Absolutely, I agree it saves lives.
What's the number one reason why you organized the Military Basketball Association? What was the number one reason for you and Angel doing this, Mike?
We wanted to give veterans and military an outlet. You know, it's really important for people to understand that when they come back home and they experience some type of trauma, you know, they're not on their own. They're not by themselves. And so, you know, the Military Basketball Association, you know, lets people establish that if you're a part of a team, you're a part of a family. And, you know, when you self-isolate, you're not really, you know, able to, you know, talk about the different things that affect you. So when we brought the Military Basketball Association together, we saw that our veterans were a part of a team again. They were a part of the family. And so that was just something that really, really, really kind of took hold. And for the last 8 years, this program has had zero suicide participating veteran athletes. And that's something that we're really proud of.
Mike, I know Bill has a question he wants to ask you, but before you started military basketball real officially in 2017, correct?
That's correct, yes, 2017.
How many suicides? And then how many, first of all, how many teams? 50 men teams now?
50 teams with men and women. and over 1,000 athletes across the world.
And how many countries?
Well, we're in at least five so far. So the United States, Germany, Italy, England, Turkey, quite a few countries, and Korea.
And how many suicides?
Zero.
Zero. Zero suicides. Rodney Little, does this program work? And you know it better than anybody.
Well, Joe, you know, and kudos to Mike and Angel for doing a phenomenal job.
Mm-hmm.
And why sports work through military basketball is because it restores structure, identity, and purpose, build peer accountability and connection, and mispractice before is an early warning sign for veterans. So veterans show up as teams, not patients. So, you know, it's building accountability, peer accountability. So that's one of the reasons why, you know, when Mike and Ace put this thing together and brought all of us together to help, you know, move the needle forward to reduce suicide, they're doing a phenomenal job, Joe. I mean, I can continue commending Mike and Ace for such a phenomenal job across, as they say, two continents and all of the U.S.
Listen, and I appreciate the fact that you guys put me on board a couple of years ago, and it only furthers what I believe, that veteran, you know, the average veteran sees a psychiatrist, psychologist once a month. But, Mike, how many times a week do your guys practice, or your women? How many times?
Well, most of our teams practice about three times a week.
Three times a week. So three times a week times 4 weeks is 12 times. That's like seeing a psychiatrist 12 times because they're around other veterans, and if they're having a bad day, they got somebody that understands why they're having a bad day, and they're not going to shun them away. They're not going to turn them away. They're not going to throw them under a bus because he might be saying strange things or acting strange. They're going to understand it. Wouldn't you agree that's what it's all about?
Absolutely, absolutely. And those touch points that you just talked about, Joe, you know, 12 times a week. I mean, that's exactly what people need, you know. When you talk to your therapist, sometimes you're just doing an active check on your mental health and really looking at, you know, what is it that's going on. And it could be, you know, Rodney just pointed out what I want to come in down on, what he's done with NASA and what he's doing up there in the Northeast. But I would definitely tell you that those touch points that our veterans have with their coaches is like a train to China. And so we're really looking forward to empowering and educating our coaches. But it's very, very important for these players, these veterans, to go to these practices and check in because it's not just about basketball. They may be dealing with something in their lives, and our coaches being helps them. It really helps them get the services they need.
Mike, am I safe saying that not only have you saved lives, it goes beyond the veteran. It goes to their families, their wives, their girlfriends, their boyfriends, their children, because they come home from playing a game with a different attitude than if they didn't have anybody around you. The question I was trying to get out, and I forgot, but now I just remembered it, was two things veterans have in common. And let's just talk about military basketball. No matter whether it's in Korea, Germany, California, Chicago, or in Dover, Delaware. We got a good friend from Dover. What's his name, Mike? Do you remember? A guy from Dover, Delaware. Rodney Little. My good friend Rodney Little from Dover, Delaware. Love him. Love him to death. But the guys that are and the girls that are playing basketball in Dover, Delaware, or California, or Germany are all pretty much the same. Talent-wise, you know, they're all pretty much the same. I know what else is the same with them. The thoughts that are going through their mind. The demons. The anxiety. The threats of afraid of going to sleep at night because you're going to end up being back in Iraq or Afghanistan or Vietnam. Rodney, would you agree that basketball is basketball and veterans that are coming home dealing with mental issues, no matter where they're at in the world, they're all the same?
Yep, absolutely. And I'll go one step further, Joe, because every day in America, you know, we have, I mean, the latest statistics, you know, from 2022, because 24 and 25 is not out, is talking about how we have over 6,407 veteran suicide deaths in 1 year. And like I said, for, you know, that's not a statistic. That's family, that's teammates, that's lives. And that's why it's more important in terms of the camaraderie that Mike and them is building. And it's not just through their basketball. You know, Mike is going into other components of sports. It's just not, you know, the NBA. But all this is coming to fruition. This is his vision. And they're creating families. They're saving lives. So that's what's important. You know, and like Mike said, the biggest thing among military basketball was the fact that not one veteran, while under his leadership in the organization, committed suicide.
Now, wait a minute, Rodney. Know what's amazing about that statistic?
What's that?
And I say this all the time. I say it probably too much. Mike and Rodney, both you can answer. And Bill Davenport, you can answer. What costs more, a tractor trailer Prozac or a tractor trailer basketballs? Or a tractor trailer of volleyballs or hockey pucks.
Well, I'll tell you, to do what these guys are doing, it really doesn't cost a lot of money. Not only that, also it's very good for you. You know, people have talked about how sports can increase serotonin in the brain. Really helps the mental aspects of what you're doing. It offers some clarity. It's great for exercise, and one of the focuses in the VA I think now is, you know, veterans' health and trying to make sure that, you know, veterans are actually, you know, when they leave the service, that they're staying as healthy as they were when they were inside. So, you know, it doesn't cost a lot, and there are several ways to approach veterans' health. You know, there are pharmaceuticals, there are ways, and some of those things are necessary, but to play basketball, or any sport for that matter, hockey, or, you know, as I said, Joe, to do those types of things doesn't really cost a lot. It's very beneficial to the body, and it keeps that connective tissue, that keeps the veteran connected to a sense of family that he's had.
And Mike,
you know, over the course of his career.
And Mike, I always say there's two kind of, and Rodney, there are two kind of sweats in this world. The sweat when you come off a hockey rink, or the sweat that you come off of playing softball, or the sweat you come off a gym just you know, the third quarter of a close game and it's a tight game. The sweat that you're sitting down during a timeout is different than the sweat when you're sitting on the edge of your bed with a Glock in your mouth ready to blow your brains out. Mike, you're doing something with a round rubber ball and you're saving lives. And you know, I could go on and on and giving you the accolades, but you're not about the accolades. You're about doing this. Listen, we only have a few more minutes. You have an event coming up with Montel Williams, correct?
That is correct, Joe. I want to say we haven't officially put that out yet, but I am very happy to announce here on the Welcome Home Show with Joe Griffey that Montel Williams will be the moderator, host for the 2026 NBA Veterans Health Summit. And Joe, I'm formally requesting you to be a panelist, so I hope your schedule frees up. And on one of the panels, we're going to be talking about suicide prevention. I'm going to have some major top panel on, and yourself, and a few others. But that's going to be a really in-depth discussion about how we tackle the problem and really raise awareness for suicide prevention. But I'm glad that I'm able to actually announce that here on the Welcome Home Show, and flyer and all the information will come out next week.
You can count us on anything. Before we go, we got to mention Tara. We got to mention the great Rita Chappelle.
Rita Chappelle. Yes.
Yeah. And
that's my big sister.
And Rodney, you're always there when I call you, and and you're one of them silent giants. You know, I know why the governor wanted you to be a special assistant to him for veterans issues in Delaware. We only got a minute, so each guy take 30 seconds. Should Chris's brother Michael, after 44 months in combat with the 82nd Airborne in Iraq and Afghanistan, should he be thrown under the bus because he committed suicide?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I'll take 10 seconds to we don't know the unseen wounds for veterans. Unfortunately for him, he succumbed to all the mental health things. But should he not be, should he be thrown in the bus? Absolutely not.
And Mike, the next time I see you, I'm going to need one of your basketball jerseys to give to Chris to let him know that he's part of our team, that he's not forgotten about. We won't forget about him.
I'll give you a little bit more than that, Joe. You can tell his family members that the NBA is behind him and supports him 100%.
And Rodney, I want to announce something real quick before we get off the other show. It's too long. I got a message from Anthony Murphy. He's the president of the Philadelphia Veterans Day Parade the last 5 or 6 years. We are seeking the public's help to locate our son, Amin Rao, R.A. is his last name, a U.S. Army veteran who is currently in a mental health crisis and is considered endangered. He's got a tattoo on his forearm and a chipped tooth. He was discharged from Cedar Crisis Hospital and placed in a cab destined for 1701 Lehigh Avenue. He's 27 years old, height is 5'7", 185 pounds, wearing dark clothes, possibly a distinct green and white leather Eagles jacket. He's in harm to himself. He's a veteran. And if anybody sees or knows or anything about him, 267-349-3357. That's the family contact, and 215-686-8477. The reason I'm ringing this is because the young man's missing. He hasn't been found, seen in the last couple of weeks. His family's concerned, and he's another veteran on the street that needs our help. And I want to thank you guys for taking the time out, because you guys not only know basketball, you know people, you know veterans, and you know what it's going to take to turn around. Look, Rodney and Mike, we're not going to stop suicide. I don't think that's quite true, but we could slow it down.
But Joe, let me just add this: when Mike is always Brandon, you know, even though every day, you know, we got about 22 veterans committing suicide, and most are not connected to care. So suicide is about prevention, connection before crisis. So if you're a veteran and you're struggling, please call 988-PRESS-1. That's Mike's favorite line. He's cloned that on all of his jerseys to make sure that he advertised for veterans saving lives.
You know, and who would ever think that a basketball or hockey puck or a softball could save lives? But guess what? Mm-hmm. It's more than putting a smile on a Sunday afternoon at a ballpark. Those objects can save lives. Listen, we got to go to a break. Love you guys. Talk to you soon.
We love you, Joe.
You're listening to the Welcome Home Show. We'll be right back.
Homeward bound. I wish I was homeward bound. Home where my mother's praying. Home where the teardrops flowing. Home where my young wife's waiting silently for me. Silently for me. Come home.
two of our friends, Catherine Spear and Margaret McCloskey, work for the Wesley by the Bay. It's a community nursing home here in Ocean City. Every year for the past number of years, they've been going to the Vine and VA home on Valentine's Day, which is Saturday, February 14th, just 2 weeks away. This year, they're dropping off 800 bags.
Bill, three trucks last year I went with them.
Yeah.
Three trucks is enough.
They're going to need help. They don't have an exact time yet, but if you want to call 609-399-6702 and leave a message if no one answers what your availability is, and you can help them. They also would need some funding if you want to consider donating to that cause, but it's really good to get to the these. And these bags are well stocked with the things these
they drop
aging
them off for you and I every year.
Yeah, and I make sure I pass some of the items on to some of the other old timers. So anyway, February 14th, Saturday, call 609-399-6702. Or 609-545-3098, all for your assistance or a donation.
I think Mrs. Bradley is the director of the Vineland Nursing Home. She's got a bowling alley in the day bowl. They got like three or four lanes.
There's no reason why the older veterans can't stay a little active and like the sports and activities. And the best thing it is, they're around people and they're talking to people.
And don't forget to register on your emails, your smartphones, whatever the hell you're using today, Flags of Liberty Elks 1895 at gmail.com. That's FlagsofLiberty Elks 1896 at gmail.com. It'll be around 10 o'clock, I think, May 22nd. Register your flag. It's free of charge. You'll get a pin. You'll get a shirt with your loved one's name on it. That's why you got to register. You'll get a spot and bring your they don't like using, the flag industry's been telling me they don't like using the word casket flags, so they call them interment flags or burial flags, and you bring it, and we're going to, our goal is to get 400 of them opened up that day. We're going to have the Sanjour flag flying behind the Vietnam Wall. That's the American flag traveled the world, 26 veteran cemeteries, 10 countries. Now it's traveling the United States, 3 days in each state. Then it's coming to Wildwood that day. And we're also going to have Mary Helen Huff, her daughter Susan, that was 2 years old when her dad got shot down over Vietnam, Michael Pilot, like Ralph Galati. And she's going to bring her mother's POW, original POW MLA flag to fly that day, Bill. Either under the American flagpole or next to it, whatever. That'll be cool. Ralph, you with us?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Sorry, I we tried to get you. I didn't know you were on. God bless you. You know, we're better now. Listen, you're going to be at the chaplain dinner. I know you're going to be sitting with us. I already talked to Michelle. You're not sitting with any other organization. You're sitting with us, Ralph.
Correct.
Isn't that right, Jerry?
That's correct.
Yeah, and we're here to honor a guy that's going to be the recipient of the gold medallion, which is well, long overdue. Bob Rylan, if you heard that last song that we played, Come Home, My Vietnam Vets, and a couple other songs, they were sung and by Joe Mangold. His brother Leo was one of my best friends growing up, and Bob Riley, they put all that together, and it was great. Mr. Riley, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Joe.
Yeah, congratulations, and Ralph's on the phone, and Jerry, and we're going to bring up, we're going to let Jerry go in 5 or 10 minutes, and we're going to bring up Captain Lou in his place, but first of all, congratulations on being the recipient this year. It's the highest award that's given by the chapel, the four chaplains. One of the highest awards of any veterans organization in the country. This award was started by Harry Truman to honor the four chaplains that were on the Dorchester the night it was sunk, I believe in 1943, 42. And next Thursday, you'll be honored. Jerry, how do you feel about Mr. Riley and Bob's in Vietnam, that as Jerry and Ralph, how do you feel about Bob being the recipient this year of the gold medallion?
Well, Bob is a prime example of selfless service, which the chaplain, four chaplains stands for. Selfless service, giving of himself out in the field every day, finding the homeless veterans, feeding the homeless veterans, clothing the homeless veterans, getting them housing if he could, whatever he could. He's the man that's doing it every day. And has he kept them stand downs in Mayfair, A&A, and also involved with Edison 64 project. And I couldn't think of anybody more deserving than this award than Bob Rowley.
And Jerry and Ralph, let's get one thing straight. Long before the pandemic, but during the pandemic, when veterans organizations, the police, the VA, did not want to visit from Margaret and Orthodox to Spring Garden Street, about a 10 or 12 mile stretch of homeless veterans, homeless people, drug addicts, people that stunk, people that smelled, people that were drunk, people that were high, people that were living on sofas under the L, sleeping. It was so bad that the L closed two of their L platforms because of the homeless that were sleeping on there, and the police refused to go up there because how dangerous it was with the needles, with the bottles. There was killings every week, block from block. They had captains that were selling drugs. And there were shootings every week. And Bob Rowley showed up every week, three, four times a week, with pretzels, with socks, with water, with holy cards of Father Vincent Capodanno, and a dollar bill stapled to it so that they could buy a candy bar or something in a store if they were hungry. And he did this, and he did it. In the winter, he showed up with his car full of heavy pants, socks, scarves, hats, jackets. In the summertime, he showed up with shorts, T-shirts, so they could change clothes. I'm talking about thousands of homeless. It was a national crisis. And the only human being you saw down there that wasn't drunk, that wasn't high, that didn't stink, and that had a meal the night before was Bob Rowley. Ralph, how do you feel about Bob? And you're recipient of this award also, Ralph.
I saw Bob a little bit ago. And, you know, when you see what he's done, and the fascinating thing about it is it's kind of always below the radar. It's not a big publicity thing. And when he does it, you know, the numbers are astronomical. I mean, it's dozens and dozens and dozens of items helping dozens and dozens of veterans. And he does it selflessly. And fortunately now, it's going to be surfaced and people get a chance to appreciate all he's done for usually our most underserved and needy veterans. So well done, buddy.
You know, Ralph, you were there the day they dedicated the 65 or 66 small homes inside the Edison building that Bob Rowley stopped from tearing down at 8th and Lee. It was the last annex building where 64 veterans, a leading school in the country, to have died in Vietnam. Bob refused to allow that building to be torn down. He took on a bobcat, a bulldozer, construction workers, and the entire staff of Edison. And guess what? He won. They finally realized after being arrested, I think he even handcuffed himself to the fence a couple times, that, hey, maybe we got to listen to this guy. And my wife and I were in the audience. Ralph, you were in the audience. Bob Rowley was in the audience. When they opened that school that day, they cut the ribbon, and I think it's the home to 65 homeless veterans now. Bob, you did that.
Yes, I did, but it kind of was not a choice. It's, you know, a reflection of a couple things. First, the honor itself. You know, you must have had a drone under the L tracks, you know, hearing what you're... Hearing that, it was like a drone was, you know, following me. But I'm so humbled and I'm so honored. It's such a monumental recognition, deserving of, you know, everyone that I heard talk so far, you know, today on the show, you know, above me, you know. But the whole idea is, first off, it's about Lou's, Captain Lou, but Lou, lifting others up. How many times I fell down since that mess over in Vietnam where I went with the extreme courage, but it was fueled by hate and violence. And one day I realized, you know, that Kensington Avenue, it would take a monumental amount of courage, the same amount to fight the war in Vietnam, to go out and see if I can minister to this war. And it would take same courage, but it would take monumental love. And I said that could be the beginning, really, of fighting my way out of the PTSD, depression, punching bag that I was in, not making progress, but continually being lifted up. And you know, like Jimi Hendrix said, there must be some way out of here. And that was the way out for me, was taking the extreme courage and applying it for selfless love. I didn't realize, you know, once I did it, I was compelled to do it. So when I get recognized and someone says what you're doing is so important and so special and inspiring, it's like, well, thank you, but it's not a choice anymore. It's a compulsion.
Bob,
but it starts with being lifted up. So many times I was down, and yous were the ones. Joe Griffey was the one. Ralph was the one. Father Drucker, Jerry Tampesta, Richard Sand, my God, Dr. Johnson, Eddie Antonelli and Gilliam, my brother Tim Riley. General Satterfield, who called
Andy
administering to the homeless. It takes moral courage. And it was like hit the nail right on the head. That's exactly,
Bob, hold on to that thought. We got to go to a break, and then we're going to play something when we come back. You're listening to the Welcome Home Show.
He sat cross-legged on the sidewalk. A far-off look was in his eyes. In his hands, he held a piece of cardboard as everyone walked by. The sign read USMC veteran. I'm not myself, please pray for me. So I stopped. Said you fought to save my freedom. What can I do? What do you need? He said, I'd like to shower off these painful memories, get a shave and a pair of new jeans, a meal I don't have to eat alone, find a place to let my guard down, a real bed instead. Address and a phone. I know I've made it back, but I'm not.
Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 398-1020, the Welcome Home Show. Bill, we don't see it much down here, the homelessness down here at the Jersey Shore, but you get up in the big cities.
But we don't see it, but everybody talks about it down here. Everybody collects money for it. We're taxed at the county level for it. So what is the problem?
I mean, I don't see them on the streets panhandling traffic lights. Every ramp off 95 of the Schuylkill, or right on the Schuylkill, they're there, and you can tell they're homeless.
I was in a meeting this week, and once again they talked about the Wildwood Boardwalk in the summer. How many homeless people were there? Well, I worked in the city of Wildwood as a firefighter for 35 years, and I never once saw a homeless person under the boardwalk.
Do you know who else you never see homeless, Bill? And you never see them come in? Suicide or politicians. Why are there no... How come politicians aren't going without health insurance?
Because they get a good paycheck, and they get the perks. They get a car, maybe.
And I know, Ralph, you with us?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry.
Yeah, Ralph, I meant to ask you a question. When you sign the application... to join the Air Force, to go in the military, did you was your comment that you can make, oh, I'm going to be a politician so I don't have to serve? Did you see that on your form, Bill?
No.
How about you, Bob? But listen, we're trying to get Captain Lou on, Bob, to talk about, you know, what it takes to receive the award. But Ralph, you're a recipient of the award. What does it take for someone like Bob to be recognized?
It takes somebody, you know, like you or Jerry or Captain Lou or somebody to really know who's doing the heavy lifting in the community. And it's usually people, like I said, that are below the radar. But once you see the credentials, it's like, how do we ever not know this guy? And we got to make sure that the community, you know, the 500 or so people that go to this dinner every year and the folks that look at the website really appreciate what the Bob Rileys of the world do for our veterans. And I think it's, you know, long overdue recognition, but it's nice to be appreciated.
You know, I do want to get one thing straight. Are you listening, Mr. Riley?
Yes, I am, Mr. Griffey.
Okay, and Ralph and Bill, this medallion, this gold medallion, is the highest award given. It was founded by President Truman after the Dorchester sunk and the four brave chaplains gave up their life vest to die for their fellow man. It's for your heroism, Bob. It's not for your singing. You know, this award is not going to say anything on it that you're a great singer. Let's get that straight. You're a great human being, a great humanitarian, but so you know, don't go looking for your records in the record stores. You know, they're honoring you for your humanitarianism. And do me a favor, would you tell everybody about who Joe Riley's brother was and how we met, how you and I met?
Oh, I absolutely remember. I had a lunch with Dr. Johnson, who. I met him in 15 minutes. He said, I need a song for the ceremony, Edison 64, 10 years ago. And I said, I have one. He listened to it for a minute, and he said, it's in the program. I said, oh. I said, when's that? Next year? He said, no, next week. And sure enough, he played that. We went to lunch the next week, and on coming out, he said, hey, I have to give you a contact. Joe Griffey's, here's the number. Give him a call. I said, oh, okay. And I didn't even know, you know, what it was about or who you were. So I called, and you said, yeah, I met Dr. Johnson. I'm associated with the Welcome Home show.
Wait a minute. You were talking.
I said,
about,
I have a
minute,
song.
Bob.
And you said, what's the song?
Bob.
He's going to play. And I said, come home, my Vietnam vets. He said, do you sing it? I said, no. Joe Mangold.
Wait a minute, Bob. Bob. Bob, you were talking to my wife.
You were exactly right. And she said, Joe Mangold from Third and Cayuga? And I said, yeah. And, oh, hold on one second. And you had just come in then. And I was at Chickie and Pete's on Robbins Avenue with Joe Mangold. And we hooked up. And it was like you said, my goodness, Leo was my best friend.
Growing up.
And that Saturday, we came down to visit you at the show. We left 10 o'clock at Bridge and Pratt in Philly. A snowstorm came in. And the biggest one in Ocean City, 14 inches, they closed the parkway. I blew through a blockade, and Joe Mangold's in the back because he had just had a quadruple bypass, and he had a defibrillator jacket on, and he couldn't sit in the front because he didn't want that airbag to go off. And that's when you played that song for the first time. It was January 17th. 2017.
Listen, Leo and I were the best of friends. We met in kindergarten. Then after kindergarten for the next 8 years, we sat next to one another in high school. We were in all 4 years. We sat next to one another. And I tell this story with honor that probably from the fourth grade on, I copied Leo's homework every day. If I had a choice and I could get my diploma changed, I would put Leo's name on the diploma. He helped me graduate. But I talk about Leo all the time, and I tried to find out one of his brother or one of his sisters for 7-8 years and had no potluck. But I tell the story about Leo that I copied his homework so much that sometimes I would copy his name on my homework. And the nun would beat the hell out of me because we'd get in an argument that, no, I didn't copy Leo's homework. So what's his name doing on it? Leo was a Marine that died around the same time I came home from Vietnam. And just to let people know, Leo's family wanted to see him. He was found a few days after he was wounded and laying out in the woods. He was buried inside a glass case in his Marine uniform on. And the glass case was inside the casket. I'll never forget. I was 19 years old. I was just home, and I went to... I think I wore my uniform to Leo's funeral. Think about Leo.
And Joe, Leo was part of the platoon, Marine Corps, Carl Martellantes, who wrote the two best books, I believe, about the Vietnam War. And one is the Matterhorn, and the other one is what it's like to go and to be in combat. And Leo was one of 24 in his platoon, and they lost 12 of them one night on Mutter's Ridge, which was 300 meters away from where I was stationed, literally exactly 6 months to the day that he died. And it was March the 3rd, 1969, and 6 months later, November 3rd, 1969, I was on an adjacent, a mountaintop, Dong Ha Mountain, and for 120 straight days, every day, coming out of my bunker, FDC bunker, I looked to the west, and we could see what was left of the runway on a clear day.
And you were with an artillery.
We always looked over, saw Rock Pile and Mutter's Ridge. Looked to the right to see North Vietnam, and then we looked out, almost could see Laos on a clear day, but there weren't many. But Leo was part of that famous platoon that had like 55 straight days along the DMZ, and he lost half of that platoon. Then he became the company commander, and they lost quite a few more.
Leo was one of the kindest, most gentlest, smartest people I ever met in my life. Ralph, we only have a minute left. You're going to be here to dinner that night, and I know Jerry's going to be there, and Paul Heck and Bill Dever, a lot of people. But that night's all going to be about honoring our friend Bob Riley, and I feel good about that.
We all should. It's well overdue.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you all so much. And I just hope that there's one thing, really, something, one thing, anything for someone else, veterans, non-veterans, just to be inspired to do one good thing. And it doesn't have to be Kensington Avenue. It just has to be reaching out to someone else. Like the American Legion says, be the one. Then be the one to just say, thank you. Lift somebody up.
Wait a minute. Hold that music up a minute. Bob, let me say something before we go up the air. Bob Riley's the only guy I know 4 or 5 years ago coming out of a Wawa Christmas morning, getting into his car in Marlton. He's at a Wawa. He hears a noise. He opens a gate up where the dumpster was behind it and found a homeless veteran inside the dumpster. He gave him money, bought him a coffee, got him a donut, came back that afternoon, put him in a motel. A couple weeks later, he paid for the motel room, and then guys like Richard Sand and Andy Sabecki and just came to the rescue with more money and help. Bob, that veteran is, that person now is back home with his family, correct?
Yes, he passed through like three different transition stages.
To get home.
And then he got to the final stage where the next step was going to be repatriation, let's say, to his family, which I connected. I found his family. You know, I find people, I found families. And he passed in his last stage in recovery. But he ended up with probably nine months of recovery from the day that I had met him. And actually, it's compelling.
All right, Bob, this song is for you, my friend. God bless you. We love you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all. I love yous all.
Walk on.